Welcome to the deep dive. You know, there are some stats that just make you sit up and pay attention, right? Like hearing that over a third of all projects fail, just fail outright. Why? Poor requirements.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking when you think about it.
And then get this, 80% of stakeholders feel their needs weren't actually understood in the end. 80%.
That's a huge disconnect,
Yeah.
especially for something like Salesforce, which is so central.
Exactly. So if you're involved with Salesforce at all, strategy, daily use, anything well, this deep dive is definitely for you.
Right. We're digging into what makes Salesforce projects actually work using insights from the Salesforce Project Requirements, a complete guide for 2025.
And this isn't about just reading a guide, is it?
No, not at all. Think of it more like we're pulling out the absolute must-know stuff, the strategy, the real examples, healthcare, finance, manufacturing, and the best practices that genuinely make a difference.
So we can avoid becoming one of those stats.
Precisely. It's about getting you the essential knowledge fast without feeling buried in detail.
Okay, so our mission today, arm you with what you need so your Salesforce projects deliver on time, on budget, and maybe even better than you hoped.
Let's do it.
So let's start at the beginning. Why are really solid requirements just so vital for Salesforce?
Well, fundamentally, it's about translating that business vision into something real within Salesforce, the big investment, right?
Usually, yeah, significant.
And clear requirements are the absolute foundation for seeing a return on that investment. There's research, actually. Nucleus Research found that CRMs deliver about $8.71 ROI for every dollar spent
But there's always a but.
when they're properly aligned with business goals. And that alignment, it lives or dies with the requirements.
Right. So weak requirements mean you're just leaving money on the table, potentially a lot of it.
A huge amount, yeah.
It is still.
And it's not just the financials, is it? It ripples out.
How so? Affects strategy.
Absolutely. Say your big goal for 2025 is customer retention. Big push.
Okay.
Your Salesforce setup has to support that. So your requirements naturally point towards things like automated follow-ups, integrated service, that single customer view everyone talks about.
Makes sense.
Salesforce themselves say a lack of that strategic alignment is a major reason projects fail. Teams jump into configuration too fast.
Before they know why they're doing it.
Exactly, before they've defined success. What does better retention actually look like in Salesforce terms? Good requirements force you to answer that.
So the process itself is valuable. It forces clarity on the why, and the how will measure it, not just a feature list.
Precisely. And there's another huge benefit, often overlooked, getting everyone on board. Enterprise buy-in.
How does requirements gathering help with that?
Think about those workshops. You bring in sales, service, IT, marketing, maybe even execs.
Diverse group.
When they're all involved in defining the needs, they feel ownership. They see their problems being addressed.
Ah, so they're invested from the start.
Right. And the downstream effects are massive. Fewer surprise change requests later, higher adoption because it actually helps them, less resistance to go live.
Because they helped build it, in a sense.
Exactly. The guide puts it perfectly.
Yeah.
A CRM built without user input is often a CRM nobody uses. We see that constantly.
That's a stark reminder. Okay, and shifting gears slightly, how do good requirements protect the project itself from, going off the rails?
Scope creep, the big one.
Yes, the silent killer.
It almost always starts with vague requirements, like we need better reporting. What does that even mean?
Could mean anything. Different things to different people.
Exactly. Leads to endless additions. The project balloons.
Yeah.
But precise, prioritized, signed off requirements. That's your contract.
A shared understanding.
A shared understanding. Defines what's in, what's out, what's for later. That discipline keeps things on track, manages expectations. It's crucial.
Okay, I get it. The why is clear. Requirements are fundamental. Now, how does this fit into the actual implementation plan for, say, 2025? It's not just a tick box exercise at the start,
Oh,
right?
absolutely not. It's the bedrock the whole project
I
is
know.
built on.
Yeah.
And the guide stresses, rigid old methodologies that don't quite cut it anymore.
Things are moving too fast.
Yeah, you need strategic flexibility, but with that disciplined requirements backbone. So you look at methodologies like waterfall, agile, hybrid.
Quick refresh on those.
Sure. Waterfall. Very structured, linear, good for maybe big compliance-heavy projects, banking, pharma, where you need the full blueprint upfront.
Okay.
Agile. Iterative, sprints, rapid feedback. Great for dynamic situations where things might change.
And hybrid. Sounds like a mix.
It is often a structured discovery and requirements phase upfront, then agile for the build and delivery. That's actually becoming super popular now, most adaptable for many Salesforce projects.
That blend makes a lot of sense. Get the core understanding, then be agile in delivery. So you've picked an approach. What else needs to be locked down during this planning and requirements stage?
Well, even the best requirements doc isn't enough on its own. You need execution. That means clear KPIs, solid governance, and defined ownership.
KPIs, key performance indicators, measurable goals.
Exactly. Not just improve service, but reduce average case resolution time by 40%, or increase lead to opportunity conversion by 25%. Specifics. Define them during scoping.
Got it. And governance and ownership.
Super important. Who's the executive sponsor? The champion? Who's the business owner? The Salesforce architect? Your power users. Define these roles early.
So everyone knows their part.
Right. And use something like a RSCI matrix. Responsible, accountable, consulted, informed. Map that to requirement activities. Cuts down confusion. Ensures accountability. Especially when changes pop up. And they always do.
Good tip. RSCI matrix. And you mentioned changes.
Yeah, pro tip from the guide. Think about scope control upfront. How will you handle changes? Even a lightweight change management process agreed on early saves headaches later.
Okay, so define the what, the who, the how we'll measure, and how we'll handle changes. What about fitting Salesforce into the bigger picture? It's rarely just standalone, is it?
No, definitely not. In 2025, you have to see Salesforce as an enterprise platform, not a departmental tool.
A bigger transformation piece.
Exactly, which means involving technical teams early for integration, for data needs, getting security and compliance in the room from the start.
Don't wait until the end.
Please don't. And critically, map every single Salesforce feature back to a strategic business outcome.
Mm.
Why are we building this? If the goal is that 360-degree customer view, you immediately need to talk about integrating with the ERP, support systems, marketing automation. It's inherent in the requirement.
And thinking ahead, too. Future-proofing.
Yes. Consider AI integration, predictive analytics, multi-cloud setups. They're becoming the norm. Even if it's phase two or three, acknowledge it. IBM found 67% of Salesforce users are already adding custom AI workflows. You need that forward look.
Wow, 67%? That's high. It sounds complex to navigate all this, though. The guide mentions partners. Where do they fit in here?
Yeah, they're crucial for many. The guide says something like 97% of enterprise customers lean on partners.
97%? That's almost everyone.
Pretty much. Especially for the tricky stuff, data, integrations, specific industry compliance. Partners bring that deep experience.
And maybe some shortcuts.
Exactly. They often have industry accelerators, pre-built bits for manufacturing, finance, etc. Like sales agreements and manufacturing cloud. They have templates too. User stories. Process maps. Speeds things up.
Saves reinventing the wheel.
Totally. And crucially, they bring expert facilitation skills for those requirement workshops. An objective voice guiding the discussion. Definitely ask potential partners about their workshop experience and how they'll transfer knowledge to your team.
Good advice. Okay, so we have the foundation, the planning considerations. Let's dig into actually capturing the requirements. User stories seem key. What's the deal with those for Salesforce?
They've really become the standard, especially in agile or hybrid setups. They're a simple way to state a need from a user's perspective, focusing on the value, without jumping to a technical solution immediately.
Can you give an example?
Sure, a classic one. As a sales rep, I want to see a customer's recent order history on their account page so I can have more relevant conversations.
Simple structure. Who, what, why?
Exactly. Who needs it? What do they need? Why do they need it? Best practice is to write them collaboratively with users. Link them to clear acceptance criteria.
Acceptance criteria. How you know it's done.
Right. How do you test this story is complete and correct? And usually group stories into bigger themes or epics for context. For really complex flows, you might use more detailed use cases, too.
Okay, user stories for the what? But you always end up with tons of them, right? More than you can build at once. How do you prioritize?
Yeah, that's inevitable. You'll always gather more than you can deliver in phase one. So prioritization is key, focusing on business value.
Frameworks help here.
Definitely. The guide mentions a few popular ones. Moscow is common.
Moscow. Like the city.
Sort of. MSCW. Must have, should have, could have, won't have. This time. Simple way to categorize criticality.
Okay. Must, should, could, won't.
Then there's the value versus effort matrix. Helps you spot the quick wins, high value, low effort stuff.
Nice. Get some early momentum.
Exactly. And phased road mapping. Defining your minimum viable product, MVP, the core essentials, and planning later releases for the rest.
So MVP first, then iterate.
Right. The key thing is that your prioritized backlog isn't static. It's a living thing you revisit, especially if you're working in an agile way.
Makes sense. Constant refinement based on value. Now, the guide also talks pitfalls, the traps to avoid. Let's shine a light on those. What's a big one?
Oh, number one with a bullet, usually. Incomplete or vague requirements.
Like the better reporting example.
Exactly. Or make it user-friendly. What does that mean? It's so ambiguous.
Leads to guesswork.
Total guesswork by the developers.
Yeah.
Leads to assumptions, rework, frustration, and ultimately, the wrong thing gets delivered.
So how do you avoid that vagueness?
Be specific. Be testable. Tie it to the business need. Use SMART criteria if it helps. Specific. Measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound. Ask why. Ask how will we know? Don't be afraid to clarify. Poor planning, including vague requirements, is cited as the top reason for project failure. You have to nail this.
Clarity is king. Okay, what's another common tripwire in the requirements phase?
Lack of executive sponsorship. Real, active sponsorship. And lack of user involvement.
So projects driven just by IT or just by a vendor?
Yeah, without the business leadership championing it and without the actual end users feeding into it. Big trouble.
What does that trouble look like?
Misaligned priorities. IT builds something technically sound, but it doesn't solve the core business problem. Or low adoption. People won't use a system that doesn't fit their workflow. Or you miss critical compliance needs.
So how do you ensure that involvement?
You need that engaged exec sponsor, someone who communicates the why, removes roadblocks. You need diverse stakeholders in the workshops.
Yes.
And get those power users involved early, and often they're your bridge to the business reality.
Can't build it in isolation. Got it. What about Salesforce itself? It's so customizable. Is that a potential trap too?
Huge potential trap. It's a double-edged sword, that flexibility.
The temptation to tweak everything.
Exactly. Just one more feature. Or teams rebuild something Salesforce already does out of the box.
Yeah.
Or they lose sight of the MVP. Project spiral complexity goes up, costs go up, maintenance becomes a nightmare.
So discipline is needed.
Absolutely. Best practices, map every customization back to clear business value. Really interrogate it. Use standard features, first flows, CPQ, experience cloud. Check the app exchange before you build custom. And have a change control board, a formal process to evaluate new requests after scope is set.
Control the creep.
Control the creep. Over 60% of projects that blow their budget point to scope creep and over-customization. It's a major factor.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, resist the urge to over-engineer. What other areas get overlooked during requirements? Any other blind spots?
Data and integrations. Often treated as purely technical back-end stuff. Big mistake.
Why is that so critical early on?
Because that unified customer view, it relies entirely on good data and seamless integrations. If your data quality is poor or key systems aren't connected properly, your core workflows just fall apart.
Cripples the whole thing.
Pretty much. So you must capture data requirements up front. Where does the data live now? Who owns it? What's the volume? Quality. And integration needs APIs. Batch. Real time. Error handling. Get the architects, the integration specialists, the security folks involved early. Don't leave it till later.
So data and integration are business requirements, essentially, not just tech details. Okay, one more pitfall, something people related.
Underestimating change management and training. Hugely common.
You build the perfect system, but
nobody knows how to use it. Or they actively resist the change because they haven't been supported and users need help adapting.
And training often gets squeezed in the budget.
Often forgotten or cut back. You have to capture training and support needs as requirements. Think about adoption metrics too, like 80% login rate within 30 days. Make adoption a goal. Identify internal champions. Build that support network. User adoption isn't an afterthought. It's a core requirement for success.
Adoption is a requirement. I like that framing. Okay, those are some critical pitfalls to avoid. Now, the guide gets specific about industries. Let's touch on that. How do requirements differ in, say, healthcare?
Right. So in healthcare, using Salesforce Health Cloud, perhaps, compliance is absolutely king. IDEA 2C is non-negotiable.
Privacy and security first.
Not a priority. So requirements focus heavily on encryption, access controls, audit logs. Also, managing patient consent is huge. And integrating with EMR or EHR systems, Epic, Cerner, that's almost always a core requirement.
Connecting the systems.
Essential. Plus, outcome reporting, tracking health metrics, KPIs, and enabling secure collaboration for the care team. It's complex. Adoption's rising fast, though, up 30% in 2023, showing how vital Salesforce is becoming for integrated care. Health Cloud is built for these specific needs.
So deeply tied to patient care, privacy, regulations. Makes sense. What about financial services? Banking, wealth, insurance?
Similar themes of compliance and security, but different regulations. Think FANARAI compliance for communications, KYC, know your customer, and AML anti-money laundering data models are critical with full change history.
Audit trails everywhere.
Absolutely. Audit-ready tracking is key. Managing complex relationships to households, trusts, intricate account hierarchies, and automating client lifecycle stages onboarding, reviews. Financial services is actually the fastest growing CRM investment area right now. Salesforce is strategic there.
High stakes, high regulation, high touch relationships.
Okay.
And manufacturing. How does Salesforce fit there? What are the key requirements?
Manufacturing often focuses on B2B sales modernization, partner management, and crucially, linking sales to operations. Integration is massive here.
Connecting to the factory floor, almost.
Well, connecting to ERP and supply chain systems is key. For quoting, orders, invoicing, using manufacturing cloud for things like sales agreements and forecasting. Partner portals via Experience Cloud are common.
Managing dealers or distributors.
Exactly. Yeah. And increasingly, using IoT data from connected machinery, maybe to trigger service cases in field service, tracking warranties, assets. It's about that operational efficiency link. Manufacturers integrating Salesforce with operations see huge gains, like 5x better lead handling, especially with AI helping out.
Fascinating. So across all these industries, the specifics change, but those core principles.
They remain the same. Clear, specific, business-driven, prioritized, owned requirements. That's the foundation.
It really comes back to that. As we've dug into today, getting Salesforce project requirements right is just, it's everything for success in 2025. It directly impacts that ROI we talked about at the start.
Absolutely. It's the bedrock.
Yeah.
As Salesforce gets deeper into enterprise operations, how well you define requirements dictates the value you get back. No question.
So considering everything we discussed, maybe take a moment to think. In your own Salesforce world, your current projects or the ones coming up, what's one area where really doubling down on requirements, being more rigorous, could give you the biggest win? Something to ponder.